Well, hello and welcome to our podcast. My name is Mike and I'm here with my brother Dan.
Hello.
And yet again, Sam is not with us, taking a break from the podcast. Because Sam is not with us, I can say, come and we'll speak as men do, trying to pull big ideas off the small screen. This is Rerun Retrospect. Again, thank you so much for joining us here on our podcast, where we are watching the first season of The West Wing. This particular episode, we are discussing season one, episode six, which is titled Mr. Willis of Ohio. This originally aired on November 3rd, 1999. It was written by Aaron Sorkin and directed by Christopher Misiano. And Dan, I know we've talked about a lot of the directors we've seen. They've only done one episode and we never hear of them again. Christopher here continues to work with the show over and over. He's credited with over 30 episodes being a director on The West Wing, and then also credited as being a producer for even more than that, I think into the 40s. So it's nice to see that they got happy with somebody instead.
So is this his first one? This is his first one that he does?
Correct. This is the very first one that we've seen from him. To kind of organize the chaos, we break our podcast into segments. First segment is usually the intelligence briefing, where we share any kind of correspondence we've had with any listeners. We're still very early into the season. We haven't had that. We really encourage you, though. We'd love to hear from anyone who's going on the journey with us. You can email us at rerunretrospect@gmail.com or shoot us. Our DMs are open on Twitter. You can shoot us that at rerunretrospect. Love to hear from you. That'd be awesome. Our next segment is State of the Union. That's where we give a recap of the episode that we just watched, and we try and find some little nugget to bring context to what was happening in the world at the time of airing. So again, Dan, this was November 3rd, 1999. Were you able to find anything kind of halfway interesting around that time?
Well, November 1st, Walter Payton passed away. So November
oh, really?
1st, he was only 45. I don't think I remembered that he was that young.
Oh, I didn't either. That is interesting.
Great Chicago Bear. He passed away of a liver disease at the young age of 45.
Yeah, I don't remember that either, but he was, mid-40s, man. That's crazy. He was an amazing player for the Bears. For the recap of the episode, I'm reading directly off the IMDb site for this particular episode. This synopsis was written by a user that's their screen name is Meebly. They've actually done a couple of these storylines. They do a good job. In the first of several episodes throughout the series run that portrays ordinary Americans and how they interact with and ultimately affect the White House, an Ohio middle school social studies teacher, a widower who has recently filled the brief remaining term of his late wife in the House, joins two other representatives to meet with Toby and Mandy about changes to unfair rules in the U.S. Census written into the latest federal budget. The other two, career politicians, are completely resistant to the changes. But Mr. Willis is swayed by a potent argument by Toby and the 14th Amendment. Toby is impressed with the man and his open-mindedness. Elsewhere, Sam tutors CJ on the finer points of the census. And late in the episode, the staff meets for a late-night poker game.
All right, so we're moving on to the filibuster. How did the recap not go into the bar scene with the president's daughter?
I was surprised about that, too, as we kind of got done there, because I felt like the bar scene was a very big arc. That whole interaction with Bartlett and his daughter, where he gives out the nightmare scenario.
Okay, so let's back up. We'll get to that. I was just surprised the recap didn't mention it.
Right.
I wanted to start with the opening scene, though, which first proves that CJ is absolutely the worst poker dealer anyone's ever had. Like, she
don't get me started. Don't get me started on the poker game itself.
No, the other thing was, who uses cash? You're talking about these people run the free world and they can't get poker chips? Like, come on.
Right.
Let's get this together for the poker game. That was my initial thought when the show started. You said not to get you started on the poker game, though, so should I just skip past the
No, because I'm gonna complain too. I mean,
Let's get it out.
As someone who has enjoyed the game of poker both online and live, and to be honest, this is not specific to the West Wing. This is all of Hollywood does this wrong all the time. It is not a legal bet in poker to say, I call your $5 and raise you. Once you say I call, that's your move. You don't get to add
don't
to
you,
it.
Don't you say
that.
I see? Is it like I see it and then?
No, if you want to raise it, then you announce you just say I raise. Right? I raise, right? And so now that's like if you're at a casino or something like that. If you're playing with your friends in the West Wing, you do whatever you want to do, I guess. They're also playing, it looks like they're playing 7-card stud, which is, you know, that's just kind of an older game. This was 1999, so this was before Moneymaker and the big, you know, poker boom that happened around 2004.
Before Texas Hold'em kind of took over poker?
Right. Well, I think Texas Hold'em was big, but it just wasn't. It wasn't mainstream like it happened after Moneymaker made his big push in the World Series of Poker. But anyway, we digress. I did kind of enjoy the interaction. I love the aw shucks. You know, I mean Bartlett, Martin. I almost said Charlie Sheen and made the same mistake he made in the pilot episode.
Just say the president. That's the easiest thing.
Martin
to say.
Sheen does such a great job of being very commanding, authoritative, but also accessible, you know, kind of with his little allowing himself to be made fun of. He's doing all this trivia and all that kind of stuff. I enjoyed the opening scene as much as I didn't like their poker execution. I still like the scene.
Could you name the fruit that had the seeds on the outside? I could.
Yes, absolutely.
100%. I couldn't name all the punctuation, but I forgot most of it.
Correct. And I was nowhere close. I was nowhere close on the DW words.
Yeah, I got the DW, but I don't know how
true. You got all three of them? Because I felt like when I was watching,
but also it, like all the, they're all root words too. Like you can add ing to some of them and isms and things like that. So I don't know how great that trivia was, the DW trivia. I don't know how true the strawberry one is. Is it really the only one? I thought that was what made it not a true berry. I don't know if it's actually
like a rhizome or something, or I don't know.
It's not important, but anyway, I get it. It made it more human. Personable, and even though he's the president, he's got time to play poker, I guess. So
yeah, there's probably an element of realism that's, you know, just not quite there, especially how frequently they do it. They're doing it at the beginning of the episode, they're doing it at the end. I was like, does anybody
get
any
work
like done?
A monthly club here. This is right. Every time we're together, let's shuffle a deck and get going.
I guess it's very accepted in Washington too, because Leo goes to AA meetings that are made to look like card games. So apparently it's just an epidemic of poker going on in D.C. or around the turn of the millennia. So, like I say, I still like it. That's one thing that I'm going to make a general observation about this episode that kind of goes along with our last episode. In the fact that there were no real big, to me, there weren't any real big cliffhangers. There were no real big reveals. This is one of the reasons that I like television, because this was entertaining and it was still just people kind of doing what they do and just their interactions in their life. And obviously the bar scene is interesting and going through the census and all those kind of things. Our first season of our podcast, we watched Sherlock, which was a very different format. Then this is an hour long television show that happens over more than 20 weeks for their first season. Sherlock was 3 episodes of 90 minutes. And so every episode...
When you say hour long, I mean, this had commercials, so it's really like a 40-minute episode.
Correct.
So clips along pretty
It
fast,
pretty much
so
is half the amount of time what an average movie would be. So they kind of have to do a little bit more with less. But I will say this, every character except Mandy got some love in this episode. We got to learn a little bit about CJ and how she thinks and her... You know, her kind of putting her hat in her hand and going to Sam, who everybody treats like the resident genius.
Did a good job. Not, I mean, he was a little condescending a little bit, but it was all in good jest. I mean, he took her in and gave her the tutoring she needed.
Right.
In that moment, you're thinking Sam isn't such a screw up, even though he completely is. Before the episode finishes.
I never noticed it before in my watch throughs of this series, but I mean, you've been such a staunch not anti-Sam, but just like, oh my gosh, this guy is really messed up. And then when Josh literally says these words, he says, the president's daughter, the chief of staff's daughter,
and Sam
in a Georgetown bar. What can go wrong? And I was like, man, everybody sees it. Everybody knows that Sam is just screwed up. That part was cool. But then I think with Toby... I would say that the one character that you really don't learn anything more about, or maybe I will say this, I felt very endeared to CJ and how she navigates this episode with having the humility to say, I don't understand something.
And then she wants to go to the bar and then she orders some ridiculous drink. Yeah, she's likable right. In this episode. She's dealing cards and being obnoxious about the percentages when she flips them over. Yeah, CJ, but we've liked CJ most throughout the throughout all these episodes anyway. But yeah, this correct. One kind of... This one, she was more front and center, I thought. Yeah.
Part of what I guess I enjoyed about this was just getting into the very, you know, all these different characters. What we've already said with CJ, with Sam. I think Toby, too. Toby with his interaction with Mr. Willis. We got to dig in more to Toby. Also with Leo. I mean, Leo, you talked last podcast about how you really disagree with how Leo's handling the divorce and keeping it a secret. He really is perpetuating that. I mean, granted, he tries and lets the president in on it earlier in the episode than when he does, but he's very quick to back up and be like, well, oh, no.
But he doesn't address it with the president until after his daughter makes it very clear that this is not just a passing moment. This isn't just riding out the storm. You know, when she suggests she'll help him look for a place and he's like, oh, you know, your mom and I will work through this. And his daughter has to say, no, Dad, this is not how it works.
Right.
Trying to make it very real for Lee.
Maybe he was not telling anybody because he thought it was going to be a non-issue and it was all going to work out. I'd never thought about that. That's interesting.
Well, I think it's clear in that scene with his daughter. That's when he has right. to totally come to grips with, you know, he does the noble thing and says, I'm going to go into the hotel, but he thinks he's going to go back into the house eventually, right?
Right.
So that was a powerful scene and way to bring back the daughter. Last time we saw her, she's hearing Sam slept with the call girl.
And here we see her again, and that comes up right again.
Right.
But it's also
this episode.
It's also interesting to me that she's, you know, I mean, without a doubt, we're getting a hint that she is romantically interested in Sam, right?
Right, yeah, yeah. And she wants, I guess she wants to go
there's
out.
There's a part of me that's like, are women really attracted to, you accidentally slept with a call girl, tell me more about yourself. I did like the introduction of her. I like the use of the family as I like her presence as not being a staffer because it seems like she can have a little more confidence in speaking to everybody than maybe. How do you date when you work at the White House? You know, I'm sure it has to happen.
You know, here she is, an elementary school teacher, but she still has access to the White House because her father is chief of staff, right?
Right. Okay, so I'll ask this. What did you think about the president's initial reaction when Leo finally does say that he and his wife are splitting up?
When he says, you're the man, fix it, no one's cheering for Sheen at that point, right? Sheen's right. character. Yeah. I'm glad they went back and addressed it before the episode was over. That would have changed my vote on the episode had they not. It was a very pompous thing. Very just like, who are you to talk about someone else's marriage anyway? Obviously, they're very close. The whole, you know, the wife, the husband, and the president are all very close. And I think that's something that does happen to people when you hear about the end of something. It affects so many people, like the end of a marriage, whether there's children, whatever. But it's also the friends of the people and the dynamic there.
Right.
But it is interesting that, you know, the president was blindsided when he heard it, so he's just reacting out of pure emotion right at that way. He hasn't had any time to process it, so I think they did a good job in writing the way he reacted and then coming back for him saying, hey, I'm sorry, that's not what I should have said, because that's what he says near the end of the episode, right? He just flat out right. says, I'm sorry. That's the first thing that he should have said, and he realized it at that moment, which just makes you like the president more.
It does. Anytime you see a character make what we're all going to say is a mistake, and I agree, I think the worst part of that reaction was him saying, you're the man, go fix it. That comment doesn't age well in 2021 as we record
this. I don't think it ages well in 1999. That's right. why they said it, right? They're pushing right. this plot.
This narrative yeah. that, you know... I agree, but also to see him recognize it and come full circle and come back and apologize. I mean, who hasn't had to do that in their life? I guess if you had a relationship, at some point you probably had to go to the person you're in a relationship, whether it's a friendship or whatever, and go, hey, you know, I kind of screwed this up. I messed this up and I'm sorry about it. It adds a level of realism to it that, you know, that I appreciate. I do think it's interesting when you're friends at work and there's a definite chain of command, right? Because you almost feel like the president's first reaction was very authoritarian. You know, it's something like if they were talking about a policy and he wanted to whatever, and then he kind of realized that, hey, I'm not supposed to be wearing the president hat on this. It's not a matter of just go get me the votes or just go, you know, do my bidding or whatever. This is, you know, there's level of humanity that's happening here, and this is my friend. I mean, I've worked in situations where I felt like I was really good friends with the people that I worked with, and for that extent, the person that I work for. I'm thankful to have the military experience. I feel like we did a good job of when I was wearing the employee hat and when I was wearing the friend hat, but that can be hard for a lot of people, right?
Yes, I definitely agree it can be. I'm an educator, and there have been times where I've been friendly with an assistant principal or a principal with my work hat on. The person with their work hat on says something, and I'm going, you have your work hat on right now. This is not what you should be saying with other people in earshot. This is not, you know, happy hour afterwards or whatever. It's like, oh, you are crossing the line right now.
Right. I'll move on from that, and I guess we'll dive into the bar scene. Apparently, there was not a lot going on in the government because we can play 2 poker games and go out for drinks.
And then come back for something. Remember, he's like, go take him for beers, have a good time, and then come back for this vote.
Right. Hopefully, they weren't driving. I guess that, I mean, I'm sure they have.
I would assume they're not.
Right. But they, I mean, does the White House have like a van? There's like 7 of them in the crew.
Right. Well, it grew. It was just supposed to be Josh and
Charlie.
It's just supposed to be Josh and Charlie. Sam gets roped in, and that makes the president's daughter want to go. And then the chief of staff's daughter wants to go. And then that scene with CJ was pretty funny where she's like, oh, you've really enticed me. Thanks for. No, she didn't say enticed. What did she say? You really
swept me off my feet. You really swept me off my feet. Yeah.
They're like, come on, everyone who wants to go, let's go.
It does kind of speak to the fact that they do work very hard. You know, they have an opportunity to blow off some steam, to be around each other, enjoy each other's company. You know, I mean, I would relish that opportunity and be excited about it. I go through whatever doors open to me. You know, here's an opportunity to kind of hang and have fun in a atmosphere that's high stress, you know, that's going 100 miles an hour. You know, contrary to the fact that there are just random poker games happening all the time. But, you know, we kind of know what the story is here. I appreciate that. Now, the bar scene, I like the fact that the story is exploring the relationships, but it's also tackling some of the social issues. I mean, we have Charlie having to deal with the guys at the bar and their racist remarks. The show is definitely not shying away from kind of exploring kind of the larger, not only the personal interactions, but the larger issues.
Well, but even before the racist remarks, you have 3 guys surround a girl at a bar, which, you know, I'm a little critical of because I think it's kind of cliche, but they're also writing this episode knowing, you know, they've got to do 20 episodes, so they have to make this happen quick. So I was like, you made these villains very fast, right? So sure. Here comes Charlie, and he's going to come help, but he didn't really, like, get the other guy's attention. And also, before the president's daughter goes up there, please help me. What's her name again?
Zoe.
Zoe. She's like, hey, I have lipstick and this thing that'll save my life in my pocket. Here, I'm going to go over there. That was kind of funny. Because, I mean, Josh ends up with it, and he uses it at the end to take care of the guys who needed to be taken care of. But you're right.
She does make the comment.
Some social issues.
She makes the comment that it messes up the line of my outfit. And it speaks, but I mean, it also speaks to the narrative of she's hesitant about her protection and all this. She feels like all the Secret Service stuff and the procedures and all that kind of stuff are a hindrance to her living her life. So I feel like it does speak to the narrative there. I agree with you, though. It's kind of, I can't imagine this little thing that looks like a car alarm is really messing up the line of your, you know. But then again, I'm not a young lady about to start college.
Right. You're an underage lady, too. Like, she's underage. And they said, what did Charlie say? He said she'd have to go to Maryland to get the drink. And I'm going, I thought in 1999, 21 was universal across the United States. But I guess maybe it wasn't. That's something we could Google. It's not worth really looking up. But I thought 21 was pretty universal.
It was interesting to me that Charlie's making that statement, kind of showing that he knows something, that he's, you know, he's in the know or whatever. But just before that, he was at the table going, do these people know I don't go to college and all that kind of stuff. And it was kind of showing.
Which was strange to me that, like, insecurity he had sitting there. I thought it was strange, but, I mean, it's developing the character, right? And what does CJ say? She says, you're the smartest person in here.
Right.
So, yeah, they're doing a really good job developing Charlie. I mean, there's nothing about Charlie you're not cheering for. There's absolutely nothing.
Right.
He's not screw up Sam or I'm better than everyone else, Josh. Or
okay, can I bring? second podcast in a row, but I'm going to bring this up. Am I the only one that looks at Josh and think, no, I think you're too old for the grad students too? I mean, over and over again, he's like, well, grad students will be there.
When I was watching, when they first approached the guys, I thought, they're going to make fun of his age. But they kept calling him like fairy boys or whatever. I'm like, the guy's got his hair brushed back. They're the only people in there wearing ties.
Right, you know? Right.
That was a funny, yeah, that's a funny situation. It's still, you know, very fun to
maybe
watch.
I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just assuming his age. Maybe he's not as old. Maybe he is early 30s, like, you know, the same character, all that kind of stuff. But
maybe, yeah. I guess the only person we know their age is that 19-year-old. She's like, I'm 19.
Right. We know Charlie, you know, is also college-aged. You know, the only reason he's not in college is because he's taking care of his sister because of his mom's passing and that kind of thing. Right. So I guess I do see your point in the fact that these guys literally physically restrain her, Zoe, in the bar. And that kind of like goes on for a while everybody's just okay and keeps drinking. You feel like in a real life situation, if these three guys pinned in this girl and another guy's trying to, you know,
well, and the bartender wouldn't have any of it. Like, no one's having any of that.
But we, you know, we got to serve the story at some point, I guess. Right. You know.
Well, what did you think when they came in, guns raised, and then he says, I'll blow your head off? Like, yeah. But it does lead to the next thing we should probably talk about. It leads to the president's speech to his daughter. Well done. That's why Sheen did a great job playing this character. I mean, he puts the, you know, lets her know what the truth is. And like, this is why you can't have this normal experience that you feel like you're owed. I did think, going to that scene real quick, I did think she went from almost crying to like smiling and loving her dad was just like race car experience.
Well, we got commercials we got to show, by the way. It's only 44 minutes, man.
Yeah, that was a great scene, too, where he says, was it Libya, he said? What country did he use?
Uganda.
Yeah, he's like, you could end up in Uganda, and we're not going to be able to save you. And then he, you know, makes himself human again, where he says, now I'm just an irate father whose daughter.
Right.
You
know. Right.
He says, I'm not the president anymore. So
no, it was very interesting the way that he delivered it. I mean, obviously she has to respond with whatever timing there is in the scene and all that kind of stuff. But I thought his intensity through that, and it was also very fatherly. I think he intentionally wanted to get her attention and even scare her a little bit, but then tries to reassure her at the end. And do you feel like he went too far? Because I mean, he lays into her pretty good.
Well, I mean, it's good drama. I think that talk should have happened a long time ago.
Sure.
It's a little
reactionary.
But for being a television show, yeah, it's great. I mean, it was done really well. The show's better for that scene.
Okay. Any other characters that you can name? I want you to try and name the character, Dan. Just don't do anything to screw up or in any way embarrass me, okay? But that you kind of like the development or that you didn't like?
No, I can't. All I can say is the guy in the bar who initially starts thing with Zoe, he's been in a lot too, because we did that the last podcast. We had Parks and Rec, and then of course Zoe, who's gone on and done a bunch with Mad Men and Handmaid's Tale. That guy's been in a bunch too.
I remember him as one of like the computer specialists in some of the 24 series.
Yeah, I never watched 24, so I just know he's been in a lot, but he's never
you
been
never
like the main
24?
Guy. You
never watched 24?
Okay. Stay with this. Stay with West Wing right now.
Okay, listen. This is a pretty good illustration. That's why we get nothing done. But we have to visit the fact that we do a television podcast, and you've never watched 24?
No, I think I was in college when that came out. No, I wasn't, because that would have been mid-2000s, right? Because that's definitely true.
Yeah.
That's definitely post 9/11, and
that's right.
All that
that's
stuff,
right.
So.
It's not like you're cracking wise, and I'm coming to you exposed and vulnerable. You don't have to have seen 24. It's okay. I was just kind of surprised. I feel like everybody that to me that series very much defined serialized television.
Fair enough. That and Lost. So you asked.
Oh, a Lost reference. Thank you.
Yeah.
A Lost reference.
Well, you said serialized television. That's definitely. That brought it back.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Okay, the only other thing I thought was, I actually have two more things. When Josh goes to Charlie and says, do you want to go get some beers? Charlie's like, well, what kind of bar is this? That's pretty funny. Because you think this show's being all progressive. And he's like, oh, no, I'm not asking you on a date. Which we don't know about Josh. He's got all these screaming fans. We don't know anything. Right. We know he went on a date with a girl, and she took a marker and drew it all over his face after that was done. And I'm tired of a 1999 show being so real and current because he did say after he asked for the Constitution, he was like, try Amazon.com. And I'm going, I don't think in 1999 I knew what Amazon.com was.
No, not like what it is now.
Of course not. But it would have been just books. So that just made me laugh.
Oh, that's right. I think now that's right.
You would just say Amazon now, and then he's like, Amazon.com, you need a copy of the Constitution. So
right.
I thought that was funny. Anything else you have?
Yeah, did you recognize the song playing in the bar?
Foo Fighters. Oh, yeah.
Foo Fighters, very good, very good, yeah. I thought that was, I mean, that was kind of cool to have that level of relevance. Yeah, no, but I mean, you know, I guess we can slide in. I don't really have anything else that, oh, no, I take that back. We need to talk about Mr. Willis.
Yeah, Mr. Willis is what we need to discuss. What do you think?
I mean, I enjoyed that very much. I mean, I wasn't aware that the verbiage in the Constitution, you know, honestly, that we had verbiage like in our Constitution.
Yeah, but hasn't that been strict? I mean, it's there, but it's something that was taken care of. You know, there's a lot in the, you know, that's why you have amendments, right?
I agree.
I mean, neither one of us are eighth grade social study teachers, so we can't speak to it. But
I was surprised that there actually is precedent, even though it's not something that happens in modern day, I don't believe. But in doing a little research after the episode, there is precedent for, I think it's called a widow succession. And it usually happened in the Senate. It didn't really happen with the House, which is what happens in this episode. But it was kind of common in the early 20th century that if a senator passed away, the widow would take over. And because that was kind of weird to me. I was like, oh, you're just married to this person, and that means you get to go vote in Congress?
But yeah.
Again, it's something that a part of our history.
Well, that brings up how much Willis is like. Because whether that's realistic or not. That's, you know, fabrication of the show, just pushing the story. When he has that big speech about his wife and how he didn't understand it and he wasn't as smart as her, I mean, there's another character, and I doubt we'll see Willis again, but it's just like, so likable. What a likable guy.
Right.
And he makes Toby feel good. Toby, who was so insecure in the last episode, Toby, who's surprised that someone can listen to an argument and change their mind, which he should have suspected. Although Toby does kind of admit he was trying to manipulate him to make the other two senators look foolish.
Sure. And that's why they left out the verbiage and brought it up after the fact. And I was endeared to Mr. Willis as well, because he does kind of say, yeah, I knew what you were doing there, but I still change, you know. I think there's a commentary that the one person who is willing to change their mind was the one person who's not really in politics. But I love the fact that they show that there's this back and forth that happens, that because even Toby, he gets done and he tells Willis, I'm not so sure that I agree fully with everything, because what happens when we start deciding elections via polling data and all that kind of stuff? It speaks to me. We live in a world right now in 2021 that, you know, and we've said this a little bit, that's so polarized with everything. That's just, I can't even listen to you if you feel this way, and I can't even listen to you if you feel that way. If I'm honest, I think it's one of the knocks that the West Wing has in retrospect of people looking back saying that it was too ideological. But I don't know, that's one of the things that's almost endearing to me with the show, that these people can, when the meeting's over, they go, hey, have a great day. You know, they were going through, they were making their arguments, but it didn't mean that they hated each other's guts. And I feel like there's not a lot of examples present day of that kind of dialogue, that kind of back and forth going on. I appreciated that in this episode.
All right, should we move on to our next? Well, I mean, I disagree with you and I hate you.
Hey, there's no need to adopt a tone, okay? God forbid we actually are cordial to each other as we work through these things. If you don't have anything else, I guess we can slide into the caucus.
All right, this is where we say yay, nay, or abstain on the episode.
We get to vote on whether we liked it or not.
In a very Congress way. I guess I'll go first.
Okay.
Yay. It's just a yay.
It's just a yay. It's not like an impassioned, it's yay. Excited yay. Yeah.
It's not jump up and down, pump.
It's not an abstain.
No. It's not an abstain. I think overall, there are things I didn't like about the episode, or not didn't like, more just kind of rolled my eyes like, okay, I know where this is going to go very fast.
Right. There was a predictability to some of the circumstances.
Right. But it was still fun to watch. It was much better than the last episode. Last two episodes, really. Maybe that's why they stayed with this director, like you were saying earlier.
Oh, good point. Good point.
But, yeah. So, ready to watch the next one, see what happens. So, Michael, I don't think anyone's... wondering what you're about to say here. So just make it quick. Can you just get it out real quick?
I think some people may be surprised. I've been playing it fast and loose. There's no doubt about it. But I am going to, in the interest of consistency, I'm going to stay with the yay. I mean, I referenced it as we talked about it in the filibuster, but this is a great example of how compelling character development can be. That I would say that if there were really big moments to the episode, it's the bar scene, the president and his daughter, and it's the interaction with Mr. Willis. But there's so much more meat on the bone when you take into the poker game, when you go into the poker games, when you go into the interaction with Leo and the president about the divorce, all that kind of stuff. Just, you know, it's a luxury to watch television and then not feel like I have to just absolutely wow you. I'm a fan of Sorkin, and Sorkin's, you know, some of Sorkin's great best writing is early on in the series. So I can promise you, I'm not going to go through absolutely the entire first season and yay everything. I know that, but I am going to, you know, but I, this is
watch a, out episode 18. You're going to get a big fat abstain.
That's right. I might not even be on that podcast. I'm just going to let, oh, maybe Sam will come back. You and Sam can talk about it. Cause I'm just pissed.
Speaking of which, just real quick, I want you to take all my criticism of Sam the character, splice it, and send it to our brother and say I was talking about him.
Yes. I was like, this wasn't even in the podcast because I'm not even sure he's listening either. He's the baby, so everybody loved him more. So anytime we can make fun of him, I mean, now I'm having a good time. Especially when he's not here to defend himself. Okay, so that was the caucus where we got to vote. Again, nobody's surprised by my yay vote. Little surprised. I was guessing as the conversation went on, Dan, that you were going to abstain. But I guess you turned around a little bit and pushed through some of those, like you say, the eye roll kind of predictable story points that we went through. Our final segment, just real quick, is on the record. Throughout our
real
conversation.
Real quick, I've written more quotes down, and I only think one is wrong. There's only one where I'm like, I don't think that was in the episode. All the others, this is the most I've ever
actually
gotten.
When I was watching the episode, I write down quotes as I'm watching it, and I actually got every single quote I wrote down into this episode. Now, I'm not going to say that I did it deftly. I'm not going to say that I did it really well.
That's not the point.
I just thought that there were a number of kind of good little, there weren't any like wow quotes, like I want to go, you know, put that on a bumper sticker, but they were still just kind of good quotes that fit well with the characters. And I think that's why we got so many in this section. So again, this is on the record. Dan's alluded to the fact I've been trying to slide quotes from the episode into our normal conversation and he tries to catch me. All right. So Dan, I'm not surprised that you have a lot there because I got a lot in. So what did you catch?
Okay. Well, I'm proud of myself that I caught them. And also I think for most of them, I can name when they happened, but
very good. Impressive, my friend. Impressive.
Yeah. Now I'm having a good time was definitely Charlie after they dealt with the guys. Fast and loose was CJ.
That's right. When she was talking about the census before she understood it.
You said those later in the cast, and I had to go above where I was writing to get them down.
Right.
I can't name this one. You said adopt a tone?
Yes. There is no need to adopt a tone. That was kind of a stretch to be... but Mrs. Landingham says that to the president.
Oh, yeah, she does. Right?
Yeah.
And then, she kind of gets on to him. Speak as men do, I think was the president, but maybe I'm wrong.
That was actually Josh when he's talking to him. Okay. It was funny to me because it's the typical old guy trying to sound cool to a younger person and not doing it very well. So Josh is inviting Charlie to come out and have a beer, and he's like, well, speak as men do. And I was like, yeah, the 21-year-old's not going to be excited by that. That's probably why he asked you, what kind of bar are we going to, buddy?
Yeah, really. Illustration of why nothing is done. Is that Josh?
That's Josh at the poker game when Bartlett is asking all those crazy trivia questions.
And I think this was in Lord of the Rings. You said Kraken Wise?
No, that's you're thinking of Samwise Gamgee.
Right. You did say that, though. And I'm like, am I talking to a hobbit?
I remember watching an interview with Aaron Sorkin, and he talked about the difference between writing a screenplay in real life. And he said, in a screenplay, you write dialogue, and in real life, you don't talk. And that was interesting to me that he would literally think that, you know, the way that he portrays the characters are not realistic, that they're more eloquent. And he's probably right. It's just, it wouldn't be interesting to watch normal conversation, right? You kind of want to see a little polish on it. But the fact that CJ says that to Sam when he's because he's kind of, you know, he's kind of making Gamgee? Fun of her. Not Samwise Gamgee, our brother Sam. No, not our brother Sam, but Sam the screw up on the show. And CJ says to him, "You're cracking wise, and I'm coming to you exposed and vulnerable." I was like, "Who says you're cracking wise under 60? All right, I mean, you have to have grown up in the 40s and 50s to make that statement, I think. Right. So anyway,
and these are ones I wasn't sure about. Soldier on. You said no, soldier that, on. Is that in the episode or no?
It's not in the episode.
Okay. Adopt a tone.
Yeah, we already talked about that. That was Miss Landingham. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, I didn't cross it off. Okay. That's that's it. That's all I got. Was there one?
I actually had two others. I said, just don't do anything to screw up or in any way embarrass me. Okay. So Leo says that during the staff meeting when they're talking about having the meeting with the congressman and all that kind of stuff. I'll go through whatever door is open to me. Toby says that to the congressman when the congressman, once Mr. Willis changes his mind, the other congressmen are kind of frustrated that they were able to flip one of them. That was another thing that's very endearing to me as Toby, is that he can be so abrasive and he's very passionate when he's arguing. But there is a sensitivity to him. I mean, the fact that he wouldn't play the poker game, he wanted to watch Mr. Willis make that one vote he was going to make in his lifetime. How do you not like the guy? Richard Schiff does a great job with this character. I find that he's even interesting to watch visually, just the way that he acts, that he's always like moving his mouth in a weird, interesting way that's almost like this idiosyncrasy that I just feel like brings a realism to the character that I appreciate. Another episode in the books I enjoyed on the record. This one was a lot of fun, and you did a great, I got to give kudos where I need to. You did a great job of catching a lot of them. Sam, our brother, would be proud. So we got to say something nice because we beat him up pretty good in this episode. So, hopefully if you made it this long, we appreciate you listening to our podcast. Hopefully you'll join us for our next episode as we continue through season one of the West Wing, and we continue to prove that hindsight is not always 20/20. This has been Rerun Retrospect.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Rerun Retrospect. If you'd like to connect with us, you may email us at rerunretrospect@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at @rerunretrospect. We hope you'll join us for our next episode where we keep pulling big ideas off the small screen.